Welcome to Ray and Tay today.
Mira mami, ven acá aquí. Come over here and dance with me. I see your body looks so heavenly. Baby girl, you're delicious to me. Bala pa pa part of me. I'm the type that's right and my game is tight. And I see, baby girl, you're looking alright. So what you got, a man, we ain't here tonight. Your body is sin and it makes me grin. So I submit to drink, so I get to win. That's how it's going.
Drinking.
I see the party is flowing. Toes, nails, and hair flowing together.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. This is Ray and Tay today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and let's get it on. It's a Monday. Got some music. We're dancing. We're loving it. You know, you got to be excited. The weather could be cold, rainy, cloudy, snowy, wherever you're at. But you know what? We got some good sports for you. You want to hit us up on the phone or join the conversation, it's 718-664-9098. You can also hit us up on the Gmail. You can email us at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Same with the Twitter and the Facebook, and obviously that's RAEANDTAY today. So, you know, get involved, and thank you. You know, listen, we appreciate it when you join us, and, you know, we like talking sports with you. So, Ray, what's going on this Monday? It's busy. Why don't you let them know what we're talking about?
It's busy, and we've got a guest, so we've got some good stuff for you. Hopefully we'll warm you up with some sports talk. So we'll go through our normal segment of what's going on in the sports world, quick run through the NFL, the NBA, golf and tennis this weekend and today. So real quickly we'll go through that. And then the NCAA Top 25. I'll give you some interesting tidbits about that when we get into that one. That'd be interesting for all you college basketball heads out there. Then we'll transition to the NBA. We got a lot of stuff. We had a big injury in the NBA, obviously. We've got some high-profile teams out there potentially improving, potentially getting their act together. We'll talk about it. And then we have a special guest, Ian Bagley from ESPN New York. He covers the Yankees, the Mets, the Giants, the Jets, so New York sports. But today we're going to talk about the New York Knickerbockers.
He's great with the Knicks.
He's great. He knows the team. He follows them inside and out. So Ian's a great guy to know and a great guy to tap into for some Knicks knowledge. So let's get into it. So breaking news, right? Let's start with the NFL. So not exactly breaking news, but we had the Pro Bowl yesterday. What'd you think? Because
yes,
the Pro Bowl's right in the crosshairs of the commissioner.
Yeah, I think that, look, they're not going to give 150% because it's the end of the season. They got their healing. They got to, you know, get better. I thought it was a pretty good game. You know, I was in and out of it. I saw most of it, but it was definitely entertaining. It wasn't like last year where it was barely touch football. This year, there were some nice hits. Obviously, 62-35, the NFC kind of manhandled the AFC. But, it was good. I think we spoke about this off air, but Ray and I both feel that they need to slowly segue in, or maybe not even slowly, immediately next year before the game just gets eliminated, a skills competition on Saturday. So maybe less hanging out at the pool, fellas, and less, you know, show your skills, you know, quarterback throw, you know, maybe some 40 times, do a bunch of different drills, like sort of like the combine. I think that would be good and entertaining for the fans. But shout out to Kyle Rudolph from the Vikings. He got MVP, 5 for 122 and a touchdown. So good for him. And, that's sort of where I'm at with the Pro Bowl.
For the fans, they got a 7.7 rating, which is as much as you got for the World Series. So this game that's meaningless and is really a thorn in the side of Commissioner Goodell is still highly rated. So he can't get rid of this game.
He can't get rid of it. The fans want it.
It's such a highly rated game. And, of course, ESPN loved it. So I don't know. The NFL has a dilemma.
Well, it was on NBC.
Yeah. NFL has a dilemma, yeah.
I liked it when it used to be on ESPN, though. I remember when it used to be on ESPN years ago. That was dope. But NBC does a good job with it, too. So, you know, kudos to them. And they do have a dilemma. But, You know what's interesting? You know, leaving the Pro Bowl, and we're still, you know, dealing with some of the football talk. I mean, obviously, you know, the guys have landed. Both teams are down there. Baltimore came today, and, you know, the Niners were yesterday for the Super Bowl, and this is Super Bowl week, and our preview show is on Friday, and we're going to talk heavily on Wednesday about the Super Bowl. But I think, to me, it's interesting because this is sort of like the Super Bowl battle between sort of the new wave running quarterback and sort of the last of the young stoic quarterbacks like Matt Ryan and Flacco, or sort of that last class of those kind of guys. So it'll be interesting in terms of what style wins. You know, people talk about Kaepernick with the tats, and, you know, that's, to me, that's just silly stuff. I mean, you know, we don't need to judge somebody for whatever. And plus, it's not like the tats are like some nasty stuff. It's all like scripture, you know. So, I mean, let's give the kid a break. But I think it would just be interesting to see, you know, is the NFL headed, you know, not like it's, you know, if one quarterback wins, that this style is dominating. But I just think it's sort of interesting where we're at, because we're getting more quarterbacks like a Kaepernick and Luck and RG3 and Aaron Rodgers who are athletic and can run.
Well, that's the thing.
You know,
you're actually
Wilson.
Combining two players into one. You're combining a running athletic guy with a guy who could pass, because back in the days, except for like a Randall Cunningham or a few other guys, even a Steve Young, you really had either you were a runner or a thrower. So what this is going to do, so if Kaepernick continues to do well, and if Russell Wilson does well, and if RG3 does well, and if Cam Newton continues to do well. Cam Newton's a physical specimen, and to some degree, so is Kaepernick. But if these guys do well, and Greg Roman does well, the offensive coordinator for the Niners, you might start having the sort of Cal Ripken effect on shortstops, where when you grew up, you know, the shortstops were Pee Wee Reese and Phil Rizzuto. They were little dudes. And then big guys started to play shortstop. So then you had Alex Rodriguez, and then you had Derek Jeter, all those guys following in Cal Ripken's footsteps. So maybe what you might see in the lower ranks of football is you might see these guys that are super athletic who maybe 20 years ago would have been immediately pushed out to another skill position, maybe to running back, maybe to wide receiver, maybe to corner, maybe a small linebacker or something like that. These guys might now start playing quarterback, and you might have these best athletes playing the quarterback position. So,
listen, I think it causes heavy dilemmas for the defense, and most of the guys in the league will tell you that, you know. It just is something else for the defense to think about. But
the problem at the NFL level is just one last word, though, is the problem at the NFL level is you have to be big to take hits. I mean, you can't expose yourself 5-10 times a game to these monster linebackers and defensive ends hitting you. So it's all fun and games if you're the body type of Michael Vick, because eventually you'll get broken ribs and you'll get concussions and whatever. So there's.
And I think even the running quarterbacks are going to cut down on their running too. You know, it will be more for, you know, yeah, necessity and, you know, and then a little bit of strategy as well. You know, look at Kaepernick. The Packers never touched him, right? So, hey. But also, before we get to some of the NBA breaking news, Alex Smith, they're saying that he's going to ask for his release, and they probably were going to think about trading him, you know, before the April 1st deadline where they have to, you know, pay him 8.5 or something million. He's going to probably ask for his release. So that'll be interesting to see if they grant him that and see what Alex Smith.
You can't release the guy. You got to trade him. You got to get something back in return. He's a starting quarterback in the NFL. Look, I never loved him coming out of Utah, but the thing
we'll
is,
see.
He
I mean, we'll see if the Niners, I mean, the Cardinals want him or somebody like that.
Yeah, he's one of the top 32 quarterbacks in the NFL.
Maybe so. I'm not too sure. But in NBA news, our man in Golden State, the Warriors are playing great. Shout out to Mark Jackson, David Lee, and Curry. But their center, Ray, Andrew Bogut, is looking like he's going to return to the lineup tonight. So that should be interesting.
They made that Monte Ellis trade to get bigger, and they knew they had something in Klay Thompson. So with Bogut, I don't know if he'll be able to make an impact this year, but with Bogut, that team looks totally different because you can move Lee down to his natural four position, and he doesn't have to play, you know, four.
Well, he's playing four now.
He is.
Azili is their center.
Azili and Biedrins are doing their thing at center, but I think Bogut gives him some shot blocking. Bogut gives him
some offense.
And so, yeah, he makes that team look different. I like
they
I like
could
him
be really
healthy.
Can I tell you, they could be dangerous in that 4 or 5 spot. They could be dangerous. Like, if they wind up with the 5th or 4th seed, maybe they play Memphis. They might have something from Memphis. That you talk about a basketball series, that would be a war, man.
Yeah,
but,
and
finish
Royce
up the news.
White. Yeah, Royce White.
Yeah, go ahead.
For the Rockets, finally, they sent him to the D League. You know, he's been dealing with some physical issues about flying, and but really some mental health issues. This is a very interesting story, so if you don't know about it, read up on it, because this is very interesting. The league is dealing with head-on with a guy with some mental, you know, mental health issues. They're trying to figure it out. It's really uncharted territory.
Well, good for them. I think Houston is you know, they reinstated him, and, you know, hopefully he works out the D League, and hopefully he can play, because, you know, you remember the guy playing. He's a heck of a ball player, so I'd like to see him really start his rookie year. Yeah,
he was
really something else. Sort of like a .34, you know, can handle the rock. So that'd be nice. But on a sad note, our guy, I respect him. I'm not a Celtic fan, but Rajon Rondo against the Atlanta Hawks in the double overtime loss Friday tore ACL in his knee. And, you know, it comes out during the game when they beat the Heat in double overtime.
That was weird.
On Sunday, which was weird. And the players are hearing it from the reporters, Doris Burks telling Pierce, you know. But, you know, and we'll talk about that when we talk about the NBA. But it's sad to, you know, see stuff like that. And the Pacers, they re-signed Sam Young, so I thought that was kind of interesting. Why don't you let us know what happened over there in Australia, Ray? Why don't you break it down for everybody?
Yeah, so we had some Australian Open tennis over the weekend. So Murray, who was, you know, coming on after his Olympics win and looking good, eventually fell to Djokovic. So Novak won his back-to-back Australian Opens, and then Victoria Azarenka beat Li Na. So pretty much the number one seed on both the women's side and the men's side took care of business. So that's what happened in Australia, and now.
And then our boy.
Bringing it
What's
back.
What about our boy Tiger?
Tigray. So
back.
Tigray, yeah, through 17, basically he's going to win. At Torrey Pines, I think he should just only play on that golf course. It's his 8th win at Torrey Pines. So this guy just needs to stay in La Jolla, and even though that's Phil Mickelson's stomping ground, but Tiger is unstoppable on that course. What's that?
Call it the Tiger Tour. And, you know, out of the 7 previous wins, 4 of those years, he went on to win at least 1 major. So this could be a good sign, man. Listen, let me tell you something. It's good for golf, but you know what? Whether you dislike or hate or whatever your emotions are with Tiger, listen, let's all be honest. He's changed the game, and he's changed golf in a sense that he's brought it to the masses in a way that it's never been brought to people before. And people tune in. I don't watch golf, but you know what? On Sunday or Saturday, depending, I'll tune in to watch Tiger. And then it makes me learn and appreciate some of the other golfers as well. Now, growing up, Ray and I, we always, you know, paid attention to golf, but it's not like we watched the whole tour throughout the years. But we know about Nicholson and BJ Singh and, you know, all the, you know, different greats over the years. You know, Arnold Palmer. You know, I mean, we know about it, but Tiger makes you really tune in. So I think that should be interesting and fascinating as well. You think he might be back?
Look, we thought he'd be back. He was back last year. He played well in all the majors. He just had one round that killed him. So Tiger is just a hair away from being back. I mean, he's probably the best player in the world right now. He and Mickelson too, but Rory McIlroy.
Yeah.
He just needs to put it together for 4 rounds in those majors, because that's what golf comes down to. It comes down to those 4 majors. So, yeah, I think he's back. Will he ever be as dominant as he was? Probably not. Is he going to give Jack a run for his money for the 18 majors? Maybe.
I think so.
If he ekes out 1 or 2. He's only 37. So you
but
figure
you know what he has? He has 75 victories. That's incredible.
Well, but again, it all
That's
comes
incredible.
Down to majors, right? It all comes down to winning one or so a year for the next, you know, 3-4 years. Then when you get 40, 41, 42... historically, other than Jack, who won, I think, in 86, the U.S. Open, you don't really win majors in your 40s. So you really have to win 2 or 3 while you're still in your 30s. But, yeah, Tiger's back. I just don't think he'll ever be. The distance between Tiger and the next guy or the next group of guys will never be as great as it was. But, that's sports. You know?
But then again, no one maybe has ever dominated the way he has.
Sure.
You know, that's what's wild. So, listen, let's move on, man, and let's talk some college hoops. Another great weekend. I mean, to me, there was, you know, a couple times over the weekend where I'm just like, you know, it's so funny because, you know, I'm out here in Arizona, Scottsdale, Phoenix area, and Ray is in the city, in New York City. And, you know, it used to be people who don't know, we grew up together on the same block. So most sporting events we saw together, and then as the years got older, we were just a phone call away. But there's times, we both have significant others and stuff, and there's times where I'm ready to call Ray and I can't reach him. And it's like, yo, I get antsy. I'm watching this Indiana game, Ray, and I'm like, yo, where's my dog? Because Yogi and Victor, that's how I call them. Victor and Yogi, and then in the clutch, Zeller. Big rebound, big basket. I got to say, this Indiana team, they look like they can win it all. They really do.
Yeah. When we had Seth Davis on the line, we talked about that team, and I said, they may have the best roster because they have, quote-unquote, a player of the year candidate in the preseason first-team All-America in Cody Zeller, and they don't really even need him to do yeoman's work. They just need him to pull his weight, right? Because
and Oladipo dominates on both sides of the ball.
Oladipo and Yogi, right? And Hull's shooting threes, and then Watford and Sheehy. They've got a nice team. And this USA Today Top 25 poll just came out earlier this morning, and they're ranked number 3. But the thing is, that top 5, you could even say the top 10, is really wide open. So Michigan's number 1. I'll get back to them in a sec. Michigan's number 1. Kansas is number 2. Indiana's number 3. Florida's number 4. Duke's number 5. Syracuse is 6. Gonzaga is 7, Arizona's 8, Butler's 9, and Oregon is 10. So, by the way, Ohio State, Louisville, Michigan State, Miami, Wichita State round out the top 15. You can't go wrong if you picked any of those guys to go to the Final Four.
No, really not. I mean, listen, and we're going to do our brackets, and you can check that out. We'll announce it, but it will be on RayandTayToday.com. But I got to tell you, I mean, I could see Minnesota making a run, that Wichita State, Gonzaga. New Mexico at 17-3 is solid. UNLV, I've seen them play. What about NC State? You know, a top 20 team, but NC State is 16-4. If those guys get it together with Leslie, the way he plays, and Brown, there's no reason that NC State can't make a run. So, you go really deep this year, you know. And congrats to Georgetown, right? Georgetown got in. They're, 25?
No, Georgetown's one out. They're the first team out. They're basically 26.
Oh, okay. You know what? I was looking at another poll. I got them there in 24 in the,
coaches?
Yeah. The rankings were a little bit different, so it was kind of interesting. But, you know, I think that it's great to see, I don't know, college basketball, this is a good season. There's a lot of talent, and it's exciting, and I just, you know, as the year goes on, you get excited, but you kind of want to see. You know, wasn't it great to see Villanova? What a week, right? To go ahead and beat Syracuse and to also beat Louisville, then to beat Syracuse. That's one heck of a week. And, you know, Jay Wright's a great coach. I mean, the Big East, they've got some great programs and some great coaches. And you love to see, because in college basketball, we all know, they're kids, but it's about the coaching. A great coach can change a program and put them over the edge.
Especially
just like
when
our
kids
boy
only stay
Florida.
1 year.
Yeah,
yeah,
Billy
sure,
Donovan.
Billy Donovan. Oh, yeah. When kids only stay 1 year, it's all about, I mean, the glue that keeps it together. There's not a senior that stays for 4 years. I mean, unless he's really not that good, he'll stay for 4 years. But
or an injury.
Coach,
or an injury or
really
a transfer.
Is the glue. All right, I'm gonna blow your mind here with a couple things.
Okay.
So number 1 in the nation with 51 votes is Michigan at 19.
I was going to ask you about that.
Now, Michigan is number 1 for the first time since the 92-93 season. So exactly 20 seasons ago, 20 years ago. And that's the second season of the Fab Five. So the first year they went and lost to Duke in the finals, and that's the year they ended up losing to Carolina with the Weber timeout at the end,
mm-hmm.
right? Wow, so it's been 20 years. But here's the interesting part. I don't know if you heard this, but how many teams do you think have been, in those 20 years, how many teams have been ranked number one in the nation? So in 20 basketball seasons, how many teams have been ranked number one at one point?
Besides Michigan? I would guess...
Well, obviously Michigan's one of them, yeah. But
right,
yeah.
Right, no, but I'm saying, yeah. I would guess it's been about anywhere from 13 to 17.
Wow, so you thought it was even less competitive than it is. So 26 teams in the last 20 years have been ranked number one.
Okay, that's fair. I could see. Well, yeah, I didn't think about, like, you got the Ohio State and the Canada. Yeah, okay, that's good.
So I thought it would be more. I thought, because that means being number one for 1 week, just 1 week. 1 week out of 20 seasons, there's only call it 25, just round numbers.
Because,
like,
but that speaks to what I just said. It's about coaching, right? So you know you've got the Izzos. You've got the, you know, Michigan State, Indiana. These are the programs in basketball. Louisville, Duke, Kentucky, Ohio State. And, oh, by the way, Kentucky better beat Ole Miss this week because they could be on the outside of the bubble. It's looking scary for Calipari. What do you think about that? That's a whole other conversation. But
yeah,
no, I mean,
I think
it's coaches.
Joe
Lenardi was
saying they're one of the last teams in. The good thing about those SEC teams is they also have the SEC at all those big conferences. They have their conference tournament. I think they'll ultimately get in. I think they'll get a couple good wins. They
SEC,
obviously,
I mean, look, Florida, Mississippi. There's not that many good teams. You know, Tennessee, Kentucky, you know, I mean, they might only get four or five, maybe only four.
Yeah.
So, to me, I think the Big Ten is going to get six or seven teams because you might have
least.
To throw
sure.
in Wisconsin and Illinois.
Sure. No, Wisconsin, right now, Wisconsin and Illinois are in. I mean, they're real good teams. The winds of college basketball go, you know, blow in many directions. And this year they're just blowing towards the Big Ten. They had several teams that have returning sophomores and juniors. So specifically Indiana. I mean, look at the players of the year in that conference, right? Indiana gets Zeller back. You know, Deshaun Thomas comes back on Ohio State. And they have returning talent basically can make a conference. And so – there's no doubt that the big this is the year of the Big Ten. We'll see how they do in the NCAA tournament. But yeah, this is their year. So they're looking good. But here's the thing: it's only January. There's a lot of college basketball yet to be played.
Oh yeah, yeah. There definitely is, and we got some good games tonight and this week. And you know, I'm definitely excited. But you know what? We're gonna have. Our man Ian on soon, but you know, let's switch to the NBA. Let's talk before we get to the next. Let's talk about those LA Lakers. I gotta say, I saw the Utah game, and then obviously against OKC, I'm kind of impressed.
Is that like new Kobe?
But you know what?
Listen,
at 19-25, and they're now, you know. I guess they just jumped ahead of Dallas. So, you know, they're right there in terms of being in the playoff spot, right? They're only four games out of the eighth seed. So can they make that up against Houston or catch Houston or Utah? Yeah, they can. When Kobe decides to be a facilitator and sort of, I don't even want to say help Nash as point guard, but, you know, passing and getting back-to-back games of 14 assists, you know, people are saying lately he's been playing like Oscar Robinson, you know.
Well, they almost switched roles. Nash almost became a two-guard, a shooter, and you know Nash is a great shooter. Nash is a 50% from the floor shooter. You know, he's one of these 50-40-90 guys that can shoot 50% from the field, 40 from three, and 90 from the free throw line. I mean, there are very few and far between the guys that can shoot like Nash. So they can do that. The question is, will Kobe get frustrated? Will Kobe, once Meta stop, you know, doesn't make some shots and Gasol doesn't make his shots, then Kobe just takes over. And he says, you know what, you guys aren't finishers like I am, so I'm going to take over.
You know what, though? I think when he sort of sees them winning like this and he realizes, look, I think what happened is in that meeting, they yelled at each other. They got it all out in the open. They called each other names, called each other out. And I think that meeting probably helped them out and changed them. And I think Kobe's realizing, like, look, I want to win. So for me to get a chip in the next year or two, I've got to get the most out of Howard, and I got to have Gasol stay here. And, you know, and I'm just going to have to be more of a passer, less shots, and then play a little bit more D. You could argue that this is one of Kobe's best seasons. He's playing, like, on MVP level. I mean, with, obviously, Melo, LeBron, and Durant. But Kobe, man... And it's hard to believe he only has one MVP in his career, which I think is kind of ridiculous. But you know, hey, it happens, right? I'm sure he'd trade it for all the trophies he has. But I just think they're in a place where they could go on a roll, and this is where they get tested, Ray. They have right before the All-Star break. I think their next seven games are going to be out on the road. So we'll see.
They got the Grammys tour, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So they got to evacuate.
That's right. So they are hitting the road, and you got to believe that they could, you know, jump Portland and jump Houston, and then you know be right up in it. But I saw some good things in that game, you know, against OKC.
Only two games, but look, you got to start with who's on your schedule, and it happened to be Utah and Oklahoma City. So that's not bad. I mean, if you're a Laker fan, you're liking life right now. I mean, those two teams are tough teams. Now, you get a pretty favorable schedule coming up.
They go to Phoenix. They come out here, which I will be at the game first.
You got
New Orleans
tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And then you have Phoenix. And then you have at Minnesota, at Detroit, at Brooklyn, at Boston without Rondo.
That could be five
Charlotte.
Out of six they could win.
Right. And
six
then you got at Charlotte. Then you've got at Miami, and then you've got Phoenix. So pretty winnable game.
They could win seven of those games easily. This is going to be a good stretch, though, right? Because their road record is not that tough. They're like 5-15 or something on the road. So they definitely got to step it up. So we'll see how this all plays out. And, you know, I'm interested to see, and we'll talk to Ian about this, I think the Knicks, man, they've got the next five games at home. And so going into the All-Star break, maybe they make some ground. Maybe Miami slips a game or two here. Maybe they head into the All-Star break, which is, you know, not at 42 games. It's at about 50 games. Maybe they head to the All-Star break, and maybe they're ahead of the Heat and have the number one seed. Wouldn't that be nice to see?
Stop it.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Fan, like the next guy, or even more than the next guy. They're not going to be the number one seed. Come on.
You
now,
don't
stop.
Know what they're going to be, what they're not going to be.
Stop getting yourself worked up with the false hope. But they do have the Magic, the Bucks, the Kings. So these are winnable games. These are definitely winnable games.
You know, I don't see, to me, I don't see, you know, why they couldn't. You know, I guess
look,
for
it's
us,
possible.
And, you know,
it's possible, but Miami's clearly a better team, and they'll have a better record at the end. And what I'm hoping for is a matchup. I hope these seeds hold up, that we don't have to face the Knicks, don't have to face the Heat until the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right. So
to
they want to be in that two or three. They don't want to go down to four. Yeah.
Right, exactly. I'd hate to play them.
And I think Brooklyn, who's the third seed, right, they're kind of yo-yoing up and down. They'll win a good game and they'll lose. So, I think they definitely have an opportunity, you know, to sort of keep that. I think the wild card is the Bulls, right? I mean, with, you know, 26-17 and the Knicks,
without
you know,
zero.
Being – Yeah, 27-50. Well, Thibodeau's got to be coach of the year. You know, that's just ridiculous. But that 4-5, I mean, now they passed Brooklyn. So they're the three. Brooklyn's in the four. Brooklyn, Indiana, would that be a nice first-round battle, the 4-5? Wow. The exact same record, 26-18.
That's a great little matchup. look, those first four or five seeds could go anywhere. I mean, I think the only lock to me is the Heat at number one. And then after that, two, three, four, five could be any of those teams. So Brooklyn could go up to two. The Knicks could be at two. Chicago, if D. Rose comes back and can get integrated in the offense within a few weeks, they could be number two. I don't know that Indiana could be number two. But any of those teams could be up there at number two. So that's a...
Yeah, we got to find out when Granger's coming back. But this is the question I got for you, and we'll probably talk about it, you know, after, you know, later on in the show. With Rondo being out, can the Sixers possibly catch Boston for that eighth spot, 2.5 back?
See, I think
Boston, and specifically
Jason Terry, is going to have to turn it on. And I think they're going to have to get more out of their backcourt.
Terry, Bradley,
Terry, Courtney Lee, Avery Bradley. So yeah, we'll talk about the Celtics as the days and weeks go on. They also have to sort of reinvent themselves, because if you look at the stats, Rondo gives the ball to Garnett and Pierce in exactly the positions they want, and
the sweet spot there.
Number of points and the percentage of their points off of Rondo assists is unbelievable. It's 65-70%. So these guys really have to find a new way to score. Now they did it yesterday, obviously, without Rondo. But in the long run, they got to, or at least for the rest of the season, they sort of have to reinvent themselves. But looks like we got our caller.
Yeah.
Looks like we got Ian.
Hey,
Ian,
what's up,
welcome
guys?
To the show. Ray and Tate, today you on the air.
What's up, Ian? How's it going, man?
What's happening, gentlemen? How you guys doing today?
Doing good, man. Great. Doing good. Feeling a lot better after that nice wake-up victory, because that Philly loss was hurting my stomach. Like yesterday's game made me feel a little bit better.
You guys needed that one?
Yeah. I mean, you know, to me, look, it's one of those things. I was just talking to Ray about it, and I'm thinking in my head, I'm like looking at the Knicks schedule, and I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, you know what? We might be able to overtake the Heat for the number one seed going into All-Star break with our schedule. I mean, obviously their schedule is what it is as well, but I just think, you know, and, you know, we'll have to talk to you about this, and I guess I'll just jump right into it. Do you think Amari, who's been playing great, and now, you know, the word is out that his minutes can be increased to 30 minutes a game, do they continue to keep Amari off the bench, which he seems to be happy, and, you know, he's playing in the end of the games, which is a question about the defense, but do they continue to go that way, or do they try to – you know, work it in where Amari's back in the starting lineup? What are your thoughts about that and how they use him?
I think today, if you ask Mike Woodson, and he answered you honestly, he'd say he likes Amari Stoudemire coming off the bench. And I think the issue, obviously, with him starting, it's less about him and Carmelo than it is about him and Tyson Chandler, because Chandler serves as the primary screener on the pick and rolls more often than not when he's on the floor. And that's a role that Amari thrives in, and that's a role you've seen him thrive in the second unit since he's been back. So those two guys, you know, spacing's an issue, role plays an issue when they share the floor. I think that's one reason why Mike likes Amari off the bench. And like you said, he's finishing games. Now, he's been working on his defense. He says every day he's focused on working on defense, getting better on defense. I haven't seen significant results yet, but, you know, let's say – you know, he develops the defensive skills that he hasn't shown in his first 9 or 10 years in the league. Maybe then, if he starts playing solid defense, maybe then Mike considers inserting him into the starting five. But as of right now, I think Woody likes Amari coming off the bench, Carmelo playing at the four, and Tyson as the primary screen and roll guy in the starting five.
Okay. So, yeah. Ian, since you're with the Knicks all the time and you follow them, tell us the importance to people who don't follow them as closely. Tell us the importance of Raymond Felton and how much he means to that team and what he does that other guys can't do. And Kidd is great and he's a Hall of Famer, but it seems that Raymond has a special, you know, special touch running that Knicks offense especially.
Ray is hugely important. You're 100% right. I mean, you really can't understate the importance of Ray Felton to this team. You know, one way to illustrate it is, you know, Jason Kidd and Papa Prigioni did a commendable job filling in for Felton. You know, the Knicks treaded water. They were 6-6 without Felton. And, you know, that's thanks in large part to the role filling that Kidd and Prigioni did. But one thing that those guys could not do is turn the corner on the pick and roll quickly enough to get into the lane, get paint penetration, and open up open looks on the perimeter for other Knicks. That's something that those guys just, you know, at 39 and 35 are not able to do at this stage in their careers, and that's something that Ray Felton excels at. He can turn the corner on that pick and roll, get into the lane, create an opportunity either at the rim for the screener or on the perimeter for your outside shooters, and that's something that was lacking for the Knicks when Felton was out for 5 weeks, and you saw that because they averaged 6 points fewer per 100 possessions with Felton out than when he was in there. And now with him back, you know, he's looked rusty a little bit, especially on the defensive end. You know, that first night in Philly, you know, it was obvious he was a little out of sync. He looked like a guy who hadn't played in 5 weeks, and that's understandable. He looked better last night against Atlanta at 12 points, 10 assists. Looked like he was more, he had better chemistry on the offensive end. Defense was still a bit of an issue, but I think that's more of a help defense thing than anything else. And, but, you know, again, Ray Felton is hugely important to this team for a number of reasons, and I think the top one is because he gets that pick and roll going, and he gets the ball flowing a little bit better than it was with Kidd and Prigioni.
Do you also like, Ian, do you also like, I think, you know, obviously, you know, he's averaging 15 a game, and I think with him being able to penetrate and maybe, you know, draw the defense to him and kick out to Novak sort of fell off without him. I think J.R. Smith's, you know, his shots increased. I think with Felton being able to penetrate, you know, obviously he could help, you know, like Wally and the guys, they joke, him and Alan Hahn, about Gotham Lob City. But, I mean, it's true. When Felton's in there, you know, he could throw it up to, you know, different guys. I just wonder, do you think that he's going to be sort of the difference that can maybe push us over like a Miami? Because to me, Felton is really the key, because you've got to be able to get to the free throw line. And I think him and Amari, the only two guys, of course, Melo, but who can sort of consistently get to the free throw line without too much help, you know?
He's going to be – I'm sorry, I didn't need to cut you off.
No, I'm done. Yeah.
I think he's going to have to be the key if this team – he's going to have to be one of the keys to this team taking over Miami, you know, especially if you look at that point guard spot for the Heat. You know, maybe that's one of the positions where the Knicks could potentially, depending on what lineup Eric Spoelstra goes with, potentially have an advantage. So that's something that the Knicks would have to take advantage of, and that's something that Felton would have to take advantage of. And it's funny that you mentioned Gotham Lob City. I know Al and Wally have referred to it as that, and I think that's pretty funny. But, you know, Tyson Chandler, the night before Felton was going to come back, it was the Boston game. After the Boston game, we were talking to Tyson, and he said, you know, I can't wait for Felton to come back. I just told him, I need you to come back because I need to start getting some dunks again. And that, you know, he was joking around, but there's a lot of truth to that because, you know, those opportunities at the rim just aren't there when Felton is not running the show. And, you know, I think you'll start to see Lob City come back a little bit. You'll start to see the Knicks hit more open threes because those open shots will be there now with Felton back. You know, when he was out, the Knicks offense was still effective, but they relied a little too much, or a little more, I should say, on isolation with J.R. Smith and Carmelo Anthony. And, you know, ball movement is key, and taking care of the ball is key. And those are two things that Felton absolutely brings to the table.
For sure. So let me ask you something. We're talking about the Heat, and we're talking about matchups in the playoffs. So, Ian, give us your thoughts on the fact on the Knicks front court with Wallace and Camby aging, getting up there in age, and also being on and off the court with some injuries. You think the Knicks are going to make any free agent moves before the trade deadline?
Well, as far as I know, they're kind of in a wait and see period with Rasheed Wallace. They want to see if they want to give him some time to let that foot heal, see if he can get back on the practice floor, see if he can start running again. So as they wait on that, they're monitoring the free agent market, but they're not going to, I don't think, make any moves until they make a final determination of whether Rasheed can come back this season or if that foot injury, that mysterious left foot injury, is too severe for him to take the floor again. So that's question number one for them to answer. If they determine that Rasheed can't come back, I could see them going to the free agent market, going the trade route, bringing in a veteran big man, because they need somebody with size in the second unit to help Amari out when he's guarding the rim, when he's trying to protect the rim, box out, defend the rim, because when he's alone out there, and we saw this in the Brooklyn game, and the opponent has two sizable guys in their second unit, the Knicks are going to have a tough time, because Amari, A, he struggles on defense as it is. He's not a terrific rebounder as it is. But when he's out there alone, that weakness becomes even more glaring, and that's something they're going to have to address either by waiting for Camby, waiting for Wallace, or attempt to make a move and add somebody on the free agent market.
Can they just kidnap Reggie Evans?
I know, right?
I think they might put you guys up to that now that you mention it. I think Rumwald is going to call in and ask you guys to do that.
What about Kenyon Martin, though, Ian?
For sure. Kenyon is absolutely a guy that they would look at, and he'd be an option. You know, he's 35 years old, but he could still be effective, and he could still do the things they need him to do, or they would need a guy like him to do. So certainly the option of signing Kenyon to a 10-day is out there. But, you know, what they'd have to do is, because they have 15 guys that are on guaranteed contracts, they would have to release someone to create an open roster spot. Then the question becomes, who do you release? If you guys were Glenn and you added a player, who would you release to create that open spot?
It would have
for
to
him?
Be James White for me. I
you
have to
so?
Keep Kurt Thomas. So it would have to be James White.
Be an interesting decision. I mean, Kurt's great in the locker room, and he does, when called upon, he can give you a couple minutes, play defense, rebound the ball, knock down an open jumper. But James, I think, has some value in the fact that he's a good perimeter defender, and you're going to need perimeter defenders in waves if you're going to beat a team like Miami that has incredible perimeter scoring. So both those guys have value. It would be an interesting decision for Glenn or for whoever was charged with making that decision. So we'll see if we get to that point, though. Nothing's there yet.
So, Ian, just speak to this real quick, and, you know, I appreciate you being on with us, and I know you got to run soon, but real quick, you're there, you know, every day, and you cover them, and you do a great job for ESPNNewYork.com, and I, you know, love reading your stuff. When you talk to Woodson after the games, and you ask him questions, and you're just seeing all that he has to handle, the different injuries, the guys coming out of the in and out of the lineup, some veterans, some young guys, and then trying to work egos for minutes. I mean, obviously you got Thibodeau and Frank Vogel and Mark Jackson, but what type of job do you think overall that, you know, that Woody's doing with this team, man?
That's a great question. I think he's doing a tremendous job, because, you know, if you go back to the preseason, this team was banged up and, you know, there wasn't really an opportunity for Mike Woodson to see what he actually had here because guys were hurt, so he never had a chance to see guys work together, some of the starting fives, starting units that he's used. He never had a chance to see those on the practice floor or in preseason. So there was big question marks around this team because of the preseason injuries. And, you know, they developed chemistry so quickly, it almost looked like they'd been together for 10 years. Those first six games when they started out 6-0, I mean, the chemistry was incredible. Ball movement was great. Everybody seemed to know exactly where to be and to know exactly what to do, and I think all credit there goes to Mike Woodson. And the other thing he does is he holds guys accountable. You know, he makes sure that if you're not playing defense, you're going to hear about it from him. And he doesn't care if you're Carmelo Anthony or if you're James White or anyone in between. He's going to let his opinion be known if he thinks you're screwing around.
And people like to play for him. I mean, it seems like he's a player's coach down in Atlanta and here in New York. He's a player's coach with discipline. So that's kind of the best combination of both worlds.
Agreed. Yeah, guys seem to want to go the extra mile for him. And that's huge for any coach, especially in the NBA when guys are well compensated. And maybe the want-to isn't the same as it was before you got that big contract. Maybe you need a coach to motivate you, and that's certainly what Mike has been able to do and do well for this Knicks team so far this year.
Yeah.
Well, Ian, we appreciate it. We don't want to take up too much of your time, but we love all your insights and all your thoughts about the Knicks. We'd love to have you on to talk Knicks or any other New York sports later in the year, the Knicks, and obviously when the Yankees and Mets come around, so we'd love to have you back.
Hey, guys, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much for the kind words, too. It means a lot. And I'd love to jump back on sometime.
Definitely. Thanks a lot, Ian. Take care, man.
Thanks, Ian.
All right, take care, guys. Have a good night.
All right, bye. You too. Bye. Wow. Listen, that's great talk right there. I'm Ian Begley, ESPNNewYork.com. Check out his articles. You can follow him on Twitter. He gives you great in-game information after the game. Ian always has, you know, great insights. Look, he's there. He's asking Woodson questions, talking to the players. So you want to get some good Knicks information and good Knicks talk, always check out Ian Bagley at ESPNNewYork.com.
Absolutely.
You know,
hey, listen, we got a caller. He's been patiently waiting.
Definitely.
So let's pull him in. I think this is Big Hank.
Hey, what's up, y'all? How you doing?
Oh, it's Big Hank on the line.
Hey, yeah. What's happening? Sorry. I've missed you for the last couple of spots, but I wanted to throw in something to come back. I actually wanted to try to have Ian comment on this because, you know, I watched the last Knick game, right? And, and it's, which is something because I just moved, so I didn't have files in the crib, but I watched it out in the bar. And I was like, you know, they look defensively, and I think all veteran teams look like this time of year. They just look defensively tired. And I don't know if it's because veteran guys just don't play hard at this time of the year. It's right before the All-Star break. You know, big man in particular, like Chandler, right? I mean, Chandler has got the worst job in the league, right? Because he's the only enforcer at the rim that we have. And he just looks like he just needs a vacation. Like, they don't have that
kind of
energy. What do you guys think about that? I mean, you know, I looked at them and I was like, yo, these guys need a V8. I mean,
You know what it is, though? That's mad funny. But, Hank, you know what it is? They've had so many guys in and out, and especially for the big guys. You know, Amari's minutes are limited. You had Copeland playing for a little bit, Kurt Thomas sparingly. You know, Camby started off out, and then he got injured. Then Wallace started out fine, and then he got injured. So there's been no consistency. And then in terms of the banging, Chandler's like the lone warrior, right? Because Copeland and Novak don't really help him with that so much. So, yeah, he'll be at the All-Star game, and maybe he'll just be like, hey, just let me play, like, you know, 5 minutes of the first, 5 minutes of the second half, because the team is tired, and I think the All-Star break will do them well, but I think starting to get Shumpert, Felton, and Amari back and their minutes increasing slowly, it's going to be a big thing. But I think maybe Kenyon Martin, you might need to bring in a live body if you don't have Camby or Wallace, right?
You bring up a great point, and that's one of the questions that we asked Ian about free agency, where, you know, I jokingly said, can we kidnap Reggie Evans for the Knicks and just put a Knicks jersey on him? Because Tyson Chandler needs help, especially in the playoffs, especially in a tough half-court series, seven-game series, because Amari Stoudemire, for as great as he is, he was never a great rebounder and never a great defensive rebounder. So you're going to have a situation where Tyson is really the last line of defense, and in order for the Knicks to win a round or two, possibly three in the playoffs, they're going to need some front court help, and they're going to need some bangers, some thuggery, some, you know, who's your Charles Oakley? Who's your guy that gives
Kurt
you a
Thomas
little bit of
Kurt Thomas is going to have to step up. I think Kurt can do it, and I think he can definitely bang.
Is that
He's just got to have the opportunity.
Kurt Thomas 1999 or Kurt Thomas 2013? I mean, that's my question.
Well, listen, Kurt is all you got. That's why I think Kenyon Martin might be important. Unfortunately, Chris Copeland, and you guys saw him, he's an offensive guy, but he doesn't bang a rebound. And Melo can't do so much, right?
Well, we said the same thing, you know, just speaking about veteran teams who need to win by defense, we said the same thing about the Heat at this time last year.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
they didn't play D.
They
didn't play
players.
D. They didn't have a banger, right? They didn't have a banger. They were getting exposed on the boards, and I think they were just. I just think this time of year, guys just don't play as hard. Maybe it's just fatigue.
Well, you gotta think
like
about
same,
it, right? I mean,
the same. It seems like it's the same exact issues. I'm not saying we're as good as they were last year. I'm just saying I think veteran teams just dial it down
a
little bit.
Look at the Spurs. That's why. Listen, give Popovich a lot of credit, right? This is why sometimes he's like, I don't care what the league says. I've got to rest my guys, and he knows. I mean, look, the other night when they were on TV, you know, Duncan didn't really go, but Dwan Blair had a yeoman's game. Because sometimes you just have to say, you know what, I need – and the Knicks have got to say that with Chandler. They've got to find him some minutes of some rest, and maybe you go with – because, look, it worked, right, when Felton was here. We had Amari play center. So maybe you let Chandler just rest one whole night. Let Amari be at the five, go Camby at the four, and then maybe you go, you know, a little bit bigger and put in a Novak or Copeland at the three, so you have some size, probably Copeland, and just go like that. You know, there's going to be nights where they're going to have to switch things up. And give Woodson credit, right? Overall,
I think he's done one heck of a job. I mean, this is the year where could get Coach of the Year if it wasn't for Thibodeau, Vogel, and Mark Jackson, you know?
Yep. Well, anyway, I'll let you guys go. Good hearing from you guys. And keep it up, man.
Yeah, hey, we're going to have to listen, Hank. You're going to have to come on Wednesday or Friday and give us your Super Bowl pick.
Oh, man, I've been so wrong all year. But, yeah,
you've had a rough year, Hank.
I had a rough year. I thought Peyton would be in the Super Bowl this year. You know what I'm saying? So
he's kicking himself. We'll talk about this later in the week, but you know he's kicking himself because he's thinking to himself, wait a minute. I lost to these Baltimore Ravens, and they're in the Super Bowl? Peyton's like, wow, I could have rewritten my whole history now.
Well, you know why that is the defense let him down again.
They did.
Again.
But Hank,
he's been doing his whole career. Okay.
Hank, I got to get this from you real quick. Who do you replace on the All-Star team for Rondo?
Wow, that's tough. Because honestly, well, you know who I'd want to see is Jennings. But
Brandon Jennings, okay.
That's who I'd want to see just as a fan.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one. And his team's in the playoffs. He deserves it. He's played well.
But I don't know if
Brandon Jennings, D. Will, those are probably the two because they're probably replacing him with a guard. So it's probably going to be Brandon Jennings or
Darren Williams.
Yeah, Darren Williams, you know what? Look, he deserves it. He's a great player. But this year, I don't know. He's had a bunch of injuries. And, you know, that's a resume pick. I'd like to see Jennings as a fan.
No, I totally agree with you. All right, Hank, thanks for calling.
Anyway, all the best, y'all.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
So
let me give you a Brandon Jennings story. So we were at the draft. So Hank was at the draft with Brett and I. We were at the draft sitting there the year that Brandon Jennings was drafted. I think it was the third, 3 years ago. And, you know, Jennings' story, right?
Four years ago,
I think he's from L.A., and he was the man, the up-and-comer, but then he had to go to Italy. He played that 1 year in Italy, didn't do well in Italy, just was a clash, sort of an oil and water type of thing.
Right.
So he comes back. And
the Knicks
overlooked
them.
Yeah, well, of course the Knicks overlooked them. But the draft is going on, and people were thinking, okay, where is this guy Brandon Jennings, right? So nobody knows. And then they're thinking, all right, well, there was kind of rumors going around Madison Square Garden, like, is he going to be there? Is he going to not be there? Whatever. So nobody sees from this guy. And then apparently the backstory is that his agent gets a call saying that he might be drafted real soon. So apparently he's hanging out around the garden. And then they're like, okay, you got to get him back in here. So the draft goes out. So it's Blake. That's Blake Griffin's year, right? So it goes Blake Griffin and then Hashim Thabeet. Okay, we knew that. James Harden was kind of an interesting three, and then it was Tyreek Evans. And then that was when Brandon Jennings could have been drafted, starting at that point. So then Ricky Rubio goes to Minnesota. Tyreek Evans and Ricky Rubio and Johnny Flynn. Remember Johnny Flynn from Syracuse? Minnesota, right? So now you're thinking, all right, all the point guards have been taken for a while, and then – who's going to step up and go next? So Steph Curry, the Knicks really wanted him at eight. Golden State gets him. Jordan Hill,
right,
the Knicks. And then once the Knicks didn't want Brandon Jennings, there was a rumor that somebody wanted him. So apparently they went out and got him and snuck him in the back door because he wasn't in the green room, you know, where all the other players were hanging out, getting ready to, you know,
That's
get ready to be
funny.
Called up there. And so Brandon Jennings they're like, put your tie on, put your suit on, let's go, you're going to get drafted. And so he gets drafted number 10 by the Bucks, you know, right after DeMar DeRozan, and then suddenly, like, Brandon Jennings with the sweat beads coming down his, you know, his forehead.
NBA drafts are really, really fun. And I can still remember being, you know, you and I have been to a bunch of drafts together. I can remember the Kenny Skywalker draft, and I'm, you know, I'm taping it at home. I go home, see myself on TNT. I still got the tape. Me and Jeffrey Ryan giving each other a dap and high fives. I can't remember if Smokey was there, but it was a bunch of us. And, you know, Kenny Skywalker, who was great at Kentucky, unfortunately just never could translate it to the NBA except for the dunk contest. But he never really panned out for the Knicks, and, you know, that was a shame. So let's talk about Rondo and the Celtics. I don't think they should make a trade. I think they should stand pat. What do you think is probably Do you think that they can hold off Philly and the Sixers? They're 2.5 up on the Sixers, and they've played pretty much statistically equally with and without him.
Well, I think that's a small
What do you think
sample.
Doc's going to do?
He's the heart and soul of that team.
I mean, oh, no, I'm not saying that. I mean, look.
Yeah, even though statistically they do as well with him as without him, that's ridiculous. Over the long run, your weaknesses get exposed. And without Rondo,
well, he's still number
gonna,
one, right? 11 and assists. 11 a
11.1 assists a game, yeah, exactly. 14
well, I think
and
two
11.
Or three triple-doubles this year.
Five.
Five?
Triple-doubles, yeah.
Oh, wow. See, I mean, that's...
You can't replace that. That's irreplaceable. Nah. But what you try to do is you try to get people who can do a little bit of here, a little bit there. But here's the thing. The Celtics have some issues. A, they knew this was happening when they made that trade to bring Allen and Garnett, you know, Allen and Garnett.
The time
period.
Would come. And I'm going to think they're going to blow it up.
And the time has come. Now, here's the thing. Yeah. The only person on that team that had major, major marketability is Rajon Rondo. So you want to build the franchise around him, even if you decided that he was tradable, which, you know, there were rumors floating around even last season and this season if they were going to blow the team up starting with Rajon Rondo. You can't trade him now because off the ACL
right.
– You know, even though we saw Adrian Peterson do big things, you know, I sent out a tweet about, you know, ACLs going around the NBA like the flu. I mean, you had Ricky Rubio go down. You had him go down. You had Iman Shumpert go down. Derrick Rose go down. So the point is you can't trade him. So then you think up and down the roster, who else does anybody want? Pierce probably has two or three more good years. Garnett maybe
but
has
But I think
one.
They want him to retire a Celtic.
Well, that's
sort of like
the other
Larry
thing.
Bird and McHale, you know.
Okay, so I'm talking strictly no emotions to the franchise, no, you know, let the guy play out his career. I'm talking strictly do you have chips to trade? But
not
then
really.
If you layer on the – so, A, you don't, and, B, yeah. if you layer on the fact that you really would like these two guys in Garnett and Pierce to retire as Celtics, and you'd want to put their numbers in the rafters at – what are they calling it now? TD Bank, TD Garden?
You would want
to keep them. You almost have to. So you almost have to say, all right, our goal is to get the seventh or the eighth seed in the East, make
just
the
scrap
playoffs,
our way. Yeah.
And then in the playoffs do, you know, basically probably lose in the first round. Although I tell you what, if you're a Boston Celtics fan and you're thinking to yourself, we were up 3-2 in the Eastern Conference Finals against this team without Avery Bradley against the Heat, you probably don't think you can beat the Heat. But you're not scared of anybody else. You're not scared of going up against the Nets. You'll be an underdog for sure. But you're not
scared
about going up the Nets, the Knicks, the Bulls, or the Pacers. So
but
I think
the difference maker would have been it would have been Rondo. I think now you're not beating the Knicks. You're not beating. Look, you
I don't
could
think
have a shot
winning.
Against. Yeah, no. Against the Pacers or Brooklyn, you could have a shot. But you're not beating the Knicks, the Bulls, or you know Miami without Rondo. That's just not, you know, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. So let me ask you this. Also, Luol Deng is injured. He might be, you know, there might be two spots. You know, he got hurt, I think, in I forgot what game it was. It was against the Celtics. He got kind of banged up. So I believe it was last Friday night. So Deng is out too. So if they were to say, see, that's where maybe you could bring in Brook Lopez and reward Brooklyn and then also Brandon Jennings, and that way you don't have to put in D. Will, you know, if there's two guys.
That's true. If Deng is out, he's also been nursing a hamstring for a while, but I don't know that he's going to miss the game. But let's hypothetically say he misses the game. That's your opportunity to do – you could go with that pick, you have more flexibility because as a forward, replacing a forward, you could actually – A, reward Brook Lopez, which would be very interesting, although you'd be carrying three centers on that team. Even though Kevin Garnett's a center, technically he could play the four. So, you know, technically you'd be carrying four centers. You know, Garnett,
right,
Chandler.
Right, because you got Chandler and Noah.
Lopez and Noah. So you could go reward Brooklyn for that. You could also reward Josh Smith in Atlanta having a record where, you know, nobody expected them to be as good as they are. And the other person, because Rondo went down, the other person that statistically could make it, although his team's not great, is Paul Pierce. You know, statistically, he's having a pretty nice season that could merit All-Star consideration. You know, 19 points and almost 6 assists. I mean, almost six rebounds. So it would probably come down to Lopez, Smith, or Pierce. So depending on how the coaches wanted to put that roster together.
Yeah. So, well, listen, we had a great show. I mean, Ian Begley definitely got us, you know, some great info with the
Basketball
Knicks. We'll have him back, good top 25. So check out some of the games tonight, NBA, college basketball, and, you know, keep on listening. Thanks for checking out our show, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
We're out.
Ray and Tay today, talking sports with friends.